All right, Reed Martin, after we have written our plays, then what do?
Cash the checks.
I wish it were that easy. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 251, After It's Written. It is Monday, September 27th, 2011, as we record and post this week's episode. And Reed Martin and I just completed the opening weekend of our seventh stage production, The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged, which is being produced not by the Reduced Shakespeare Company, but by the Napa Valley Conservatory Theater at Napa Valley College in Northern California. Last week in episode 250 of the podcast, Reed and I told you about who brings what to the table in our playwriting partnership. This week, we continue the conversation, talking about what happens next after we've written our scripts.
Well, we pray.
Yes.
Yes.
This is a reference to the Christmas show.
Yes, yes, and the Bible show.
Yes, yes. The efficacy of prayer.
Well, and it also presupposes that we finish writing the scripts.
Yeah, that my mind was saying, well, after it's written. Well, how do we define after it's written?
Yeah.
What do we have, three or four drafts?
Three or four drafts.
And how you define drafts is interesting, too. I mean, even the first draft would have scenes that are on their fourth or fifth draft. So the draft to me only means when all the sketches have been put together. But the first draft, some of the sketches have had multiple incarnations.
Well, and some of the scripts are written over different lengths of time.
Yeah.
The sports, like, seems like we wrote it over a couple, 6-8 months or more. The Christmas show is different in that it recycles two songs, two musical moments from the Christmas CD that we did back in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the bulk of the writing, for me, didn't start until May. And what is that? When we were in New Zealand. What was that, 3 months ago?
Yeah. And we met two or three times reading sketches, but you didn't. You were sort of weren't inspired, or you were busy. You were moving.
I was. That was the thing.
You had a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So one of my writing things that I do is I just write down
lists.
Not yet lists of things.
Yeah.
And I was just going back over that, and 2/3 of what was on that list has somehow appeared in some incarnation in the show, and I think I made that in January.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the first time we met. Was it? We read some stuff in Minnesota. I remember. In Duluth.
And we were down in Alabama.
Yes, and we read some stuff in Alabama, so that would have been January, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, not a lot. I mean, we probably between us, we had 5 or 6 scenes in each of those.
Well, and it's the end of September 2011 right now.
Yeah. So after it's so if we say, well, after it's written, is it, if we say, well, the script we go into rehearsal with.
Well, I guess that's the thing. After it's written, that's when we start rehearsing, and we keep writing.
Well, and it's Joel Cole, my high school English teacher and the advisor for the Dragonsdale newspaper at Sonoma Valley High School, always said writing is rewriting.
Yeah.
First, and because in the abstract, it's sort of intimidating. It's always hard. Mm-hmm. But once you have something on paper, then you can read it and then you can start tweaking. So if you say that, well, after it's written, we go into rehearsal, then the cast reads it.
Yeah.
We're changing it as we go along. We're moving sketches around. We're cutting sketches.
Yeah.
We're discussing it. Well, what do we need to cover that we haven't covered yet?
Right. Well, I know that one thing that happens with me, and I suspect it happens to a certain degree with you as well, is that, you know, we write it as writers, but certainly our instincts as actors and our experience and skill as directors informs the writing, because you figure out, well, I'm going to write this, but I know we'll fix it in rehearsal. Or I'm going to write this, and I know directorially or as an actor how I can make this work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're writing it, and you want the words to be right, and you want it to ebb and flow and have a rise and fall, et cetera, et cetera. But then we get it into rehearsal, and then we have to start saying it. So it's the other parts of our brains that take over. Or we also have to direct the current crop of actors that are working on the Christmas show right now. We have to then approach it as directors. We have to direct the actors to interpret the script.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to analyze the text as directors, going, well, I think we can help this if we move the text around to match the blocking, for instance.
Mm-hmm. That's something I've been very aware of in this rehearsal period for the Christmas show is looking for, we're saying this in six syllables. I think we can say this in two syllables in sentences, you know, just making it simpler.
But does that make it better?
Oftentimes that it's overwritten. You know?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
What did Mark Twain say? I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have enough time.
Yeah, no, exactly right.
A lot of it is from our experience performing the shows and just our comedy experience is getting the funny word at the end of the line, getting the, you know, moving, flip-flopping. We tried something today, and I'm not sure it actually...
It didn't work. It's a baseball player thing.
No, we moved what we thought was the funny thing to the end of the line. Sometimes you move to the end of the line, and it's only funny in the middle of the line. And that you can't learn until there's an audience.
Right.
So those sorts of things. So we start to rehearse it. We hear it in people's mouths. We have other people come and say, well, this wasn't clear to me. Something might be clear to us what we intended, but it's clear in our head, but it's maybe not clear on the page.
Yeah.
So Mick saw a rehearsal and had some good...
Mick Orff.
Yeah, and had some good notes about, well, I didn't understand this. I go, oh, okay, that's interesting. It's clear in my head, but it's not clear on the page.
Right. Interesting. Not
clear in the storytelling.
Yeah.
Well, you and I have an advantage in that we know before it's written that it's going to be rehearsed and produced.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know that after it's written, it's going to go into rehearsal.
Yeah.
So the writing process is just the beginning of the development process of the thing. But, I mean, a lot of playwrights don't have that luxury. You know, after it's written, they've got to go, now what? You know? But I think what we do after it's written is similar to many people. You get a bunch of actors together and you read it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the actors are us, or sometimes they're not us.
Mm-hmm.
You get a bunch of actors together, read it, hear what it sounds like, hear the words coming out of the actors' mouths and see, oh, God, that's a line you write. That sounds like it's written. It doesn't sound like it's spoken. These kinds of things.
Well, and we also, and I'm not aware of this other than people have told me, but you and I talk in shorthand in the rehearsal room in ways that people don't understand necessarily, but it's very clear
to us
because we've been working and writing together for so long.
Right.
Another thing that happens after it's written is that because often sketches are written before even we know what the character through lines are, is that, this is a funny sketch, and it seems like this might be something Austin's character would say. And then we find out later, oh, no, because of other things that happened, this needs to be Matt playing this part. In the Christmas show, my character has a fear of Santa, which, you know, came along not late in the process, but not at the beginning of the process.
Right.
And so certain things where I was talking about Santa needed to be given to somebody else or it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, well, and I noticed, too, that, you know, things would come up and we talked about this last week, in fact, where, one tiny reference becomes a running gag or a running motif for one of the characters. But another time, you know, there'll be instances where you'll bring up an idea and I'll go, oh, yeah, I'll like that. I know exactly where that's going to work, how that works and how that develops. But in other times, I know you've brought up, I can't think of any examples, but you brought up an idea and I go, it doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a week later I go, oh, hang on. If you brought up the idea that was point D, but if I can figure out where A, B, C, and F, E and F are, now I get it. Now I can figure out how that works for me.
And then once it's written, we read it amongst ourselves, and then we read it at rehearsals for people that we invite to come see it and find out where the laughs are, and that informs everything.
You got to make sure to invite the right people. Well, and I think particularly the Christmas show, last week we talked about the Paul McCartney W, which is why I'm sure he called it Wings. you start and end each act on a high, with lows in the middle, and the same. But we had actually considered the Christmas show wants to be maybe a little more heartwarming than some of our other shows. A Christmas show wants to be that, and we talked about, and we knew we wanted.
In fact, Charles Towers at Merrimack Rep, even before we started to write it, but we knew we were going to. He said, "Just you guys are funny. I'm not worried about it, but make sure people there's some warmth to it. I think there's warmth in all of our shows.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
Yeah,
and maybe we've gone a little overboard in the warmth and the heartwarming for the Christmas show, but maybe that's appropriate. We'll find out when we play tomorrow. Audiences, but we thought of ending the show heartwarming, but then we also thought of ending Act One heartwarming. But then when we read it a couple times, it felt it's too many times to go to the heartwarming slow fade to black. You know
well, you don't want to end the first act and second act the same way. I think either act could end that way. In fact, neither act ends that way.
Currently, And we discovered that as actors and directors. We were reading the text that the writers had presented to us.
Yeah.
So we were wearing our actor and director brains when we made that decision. Because the writers thought that that would be a good idea. And then we wrote and performed, and then we wrote it and we're just sitting around a table. Yeah. We went, that doesn't seem right.
Right. Yeah. Well, and the cast where the Christmas show is being performed currently, the non-reduced Shakespeare Company production at Apa Valley College. They kid with us. They go, oh, you're going to love doing this part. Like, there's a really hard costume change, right? Or, oh, this is great. Do more of that. He goes, we'll see if you feel that way when you're the ones who have to do it, right? Yeah. Or,
wait, you're making me wear this costume? Oh, well, let's see what happens when you have to wear that stupid costume.
Yeah, exactly.
Hi, this is Stephen Weber, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? In 2 weeks, you can see us at Pepperdine University in Malibu and Caltech in Pasadena, California, performing All the Great Books Abridged. And boy, we had better start looking at that script. It's been a while since we did that one. Then we head to the New Victory Theater in New York City for a 3-week run of The Complete World of Sports Abridged. And then starting on November 25th, the day after Thanksgiving, we premiere the Reduced Shakespeare Company's 8th stage production of the script we've been talking about here the last couple of weeks, and the script we start rehearsing today, The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged, at the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for The Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com, click on the link to subscribe, and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
You and I can fall back on the cushion of, well, we can make it work.
But we also have to write it in such a way that other actors can make it work, too. Not so it's actor-proof, because not every actor can do this stuff. Right. I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that we have to find actors who pretty quickly realize that the instincts to perform this material is to play it straight.
Mm-hmm.
Play it straight, again, like it's a real play.
Mm-hmm.
And those are hard to find, the actors who can do a comedy like this and keep it real.
Well, and the other thing, after it's written, is finding actors who are trying to memorize and learn a moving target.
Yeah.
The script we started rehearsals with 6 weeks ago was very different.
Yeah.
From what was performed on opening night, the opening night of Apa College, 2 or 3 days ago. And so we want them to memorize it, and yet we're constantly giving them tweaks and changes and cutting this, and let's change this introduction, and let's cut this punchline.
Yeah.
And these guys have been great.
Well, they have been great. And as a director, I've been very impatient with them, which is means that I'm a jerk. Because you know, it's like, okay, well, why can't they memorize the moving target and just loosen up and have fun?
Right.
Because they're tired and exhausted and learning new lines.
Yeah. Well, and after it's written and rehearsed, if you work in the theater or any performing art, you know this. Now technical elements are introduced.
Yeah, right.
There's lights, there's sound, there's costumes and props. And so then all the performances, our first preview, it was free, and the audience got exactly what they paid for.
Yes, they did.
It just, you know, the acting values largely went out the window because this, it's a new costume I'm wearing. How does this work? Here's a new prop. Oh, I missed. I'm supposed to go to that light, because the light isn't on over here. Oh, here's a new sound cue I've never heard. Oh, well, roll with this.
Yeah, well, today at the third performance, the first matinee, they got a new sound cue right at the top of the show, and I think we're keeping that sound cue.
Yeah.
Well, and again, I don't know how other playwrights do it, but, you know, we are making changes in rehearsal. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are some playwrights who come in and say, learn that. I'm not changing a word.
That's a drama.
Yeah, maybe that's a... Maybe that's a drama.
They say what? Drama seems to be taken more seriously. I always think comedy is harder because if it's not funny, the audience will tell you right away. If a drama is working or not working, how can you tell by the reaction of the audience?
When they leave it in intermission.
Yes, but if it's really, really bad.
No, I know. Well, and drama seems to excuse a lot. Well, I want that 30-second pause there. Really? Where nothing's happening? Okay.
Yeah.
Again, we are fortunate. You mentioned Charles Towers. We knew before... Well, we knew we were going to write the show, but before we actually put pen to paper, Charles Towers at Merrimack Repertory Theater said, I would love to do the premiere production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company and Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged at my theater in December of 2011. So, again, we are incredibly fortunate to have that luxury, that knowing it's going to get performed. And on the one hand, it's a luxury. On the other hand, it's like, oh, crap, we better get it right.
Yeah. It's like, yes, I'm not going to write the book until it's sold. Well, we write the play. It's already sold. Yeah, we had decided to write a Christmas show, and Napa Valley College had agreed to do the first production. And then, shortly thereafter, Merrimack Rep said, we'll take it. Another thing that the actors, a lot of the notes I take for actors are, you don't necessarily know where all the laughs are going to be until the audience is in there.
Yeah.
And the actors are concentrating on many things, and it's not always listening for the laugh. That's maybe second or third or fourth down the list. So some of the notes I give are, there's a big laugh here, just ride that out, which is a nice problem to have. But learning how to, after it's written, learning how to play the material, where you can pause, where you need to drive it, those sorts of things.
Well, and yeah, and how to keep driving it and still allow that breath for the audience to have their reaction. Because this is the other thing about, when I was at the BMI Music Theater Workshop, I worked with and was in classes with composers. Says, oh, well, I don't want to put an applause button in the song. The song, the moment doesn't require that. Okay, fair enough. But you want to do that sparingly because you want to give the audience their opportunity. The audience is part of this experience as well. Mm-hmm. And they need their opportunity to applaud, to know that it's over, to laugh and express their reaction to what they're seeing, and the actors and the playwrights have to acknowledge that.
When you don't have to do a blackout to get applause, then you know it's really good.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to black out.
Yeah.
to get the applause. Sometimes you have to say thank you. Yeah, and we figure out different ways in different scenes. It's it's all different.
There are a couple of blackouts in the first act that make me that begin applause, and then make me go, ooh, I wonder if the audience thinks that's the end of the first act.
Hmm.
Like at the end of the Yes, Virginia letter.
I mean, that's one of the places I'm going.
They don't seem to mind when the next bit comes up. Nobody seems disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, that's nice.
Yeah.
What's also nice about the Christmas show, and I mean, this is true about all of our shows, what's so gratifying is that audience members of all ages seem to be enjoying it. We've had a handful of kids, you know, teens and below. And today at the matinee.
Sunday matinee, yes.
Sunday matinee, the entire front row was filled with ladies of a certain age, you know, just. And they were old. They were old broads. Let's just. They were old broads. And they were giggling like schoolgirls throughout. And I, you know, and so the buzz is very strong.
Well, and at the other end of the spectrum, because we've been working the show at a college, thankfully the theater teachers required many of their students to come and sit in on the readings to see how a play development process works. So it's great to have an audience when it skews so young. And a lot of these are not even theater majors. Maybe they're taking a theater breadth class. You learn something, but you don't learn as much as if you kind of have a mixed crowd, so that, you know, some people in their 70s will get this joke, and some people in their 40s will get this, and some people in their 20s will get this. But, as you say, at the moment, it seems like it's a wide spectrum.
Well, and after it's written, after it's performed, we'll continue to keep writing. We'll continue to keep tweaking and making changes through our run at Merrimack, hopefully in the Christmas of 2012. We'll be doing it again some other theater, and I'm sure we'll make changes throughout the year. And when we get back into rehearsal, because that talk about a show we'll have to brush up, it will have been 11 months. And again, we're in the luxurious position of hopefully it'll get published. We can't guarantee it, but we have a great relationship with Kip Gould at Broadway Play Publishing, and so after it's written, after it's performed, it'll get published, and that's where you really want to make sure that the script is right and tight. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us what you do after writing your script via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a Twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to Webmaster Matt Rippey, script draft note giver Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Laura Gibbons. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to TV's Stephen Weber, and thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 251 753rds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. So, after it's written, after it's performed, after it's published, we got to write something else, right?
Oh, Jesus.
Crap.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.